From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
I suspect there will be a lot of talk about
The former head of the EPA, Christine Todd Whitman, refuses to apologize for her assurances that the air around Ground Zero was safe to breathe in the days after 9/11. We'll speak with members of the Beyond Ground Zero Coalition who traveled to Washington to attend the tense hearing. They called for accountability.
They annulled the lie that she said yesterday, but they say the air is, you know, clean. Well, it's not true, because it's a lot of sick people, especially me, because I take a lot of medication.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Supreme Court has dealt a blow to campaign finance reform by throwing out part of the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law that placed restrictions on corporations and unions from buying television ads close to elections. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the 5-4 decision. He said the prohibition against corporate ads mentioning a candidate's name in the days before an election is an unconstitutional infringement on the rights of corporations. The ruling's expected to affect the 2008 presidential election and will likely encourage a financial arms race between special interest groups. Mary Wilson of the League of Women Voters said, quote, "This is a big win for big money." Chief Justice Roberts has reopened the door to corruption, she said. Voting with Roberts was Samuel Alito, Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, and Anthony Kennedy. The same majority of the High Court also ruled on Monday that public schools can prohibit student expression that can be interpreted as advocating drug use. The case centered on a high school student in Alaska who was suspended for holding a sign that read, "Bong Hits for Jesus," at a parade during a school trip. In his dissent, John Paul Stevens criticized the majority of the court for inventing out of whole cloth a special First Amendment rule permitting the censorship of any student's speech that mentions drugs. In another 5-4 ruling, the Roberts Court handed a victory to President Bush's faith-based initiatives program. The court ruled ordinary taxpayers cannot challenge the constitutionality of White House efforts to help religious groups obtain government funding for their social programs. In a case closely watched by environmental groups, the court ruled the federal government can avoid its responsibility to protect species under the Endangered Species Act by handing off authority to the states. In Iraq, four pro-U.S. Sunni sheikhs were killed Monday in a suicide bombing in a Baghdad hotel. All four sheikhs were meeting to discuss their alliance with the United States to fight al-Qaeda in Anbar province. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., another prominent Republican senator has split with President Bush over the war. Senator Richard Lugar said the president's so-called surge is failing and that the number of troops in Iraq should be cut. Special envoys of the European Union, Russia, United Nations, and United States are meeting today at the U.S. consulate in Jerusalem to discuss the situation in the occupied territories. On Monday, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in Egypt to discuss how Israel could bolster Fatah forces aligned with Abbas. Olmert agreed to release 250 prisoners, Palestinian, all of whom are tied to Abbas's Fatah faction. Many Palestinians criticize Olmert for not freeing more of the 11,000 Palestinians being held in Israel.
I wish for my son and all the prisoners an immediate release, both for Fatah members and non-Fatah members. What does 250 prisoners out of many thousands of prisoners mean? I hope they will release all the prisoners.
A Hamas spokesperson dismissed Monday's talks and accused Fatah of partnering with Israel.
Sharm el-Sheikh summit only represents going in circles and bypassing mirage solutions. This summit did not present or offer anything new to the Palestinian people, except empty promises like the discussion about the release of some of the money that rightfully belongs to our Palestinian people. Also, the discussion about the release of 250 prisoners, all from the Fatah faction, means that they are talking about a partnership that is not between Hamas and Fatah, but unfortunately between the leaders of the authority and the Israeli occupation.
Meanwhile, the chief Palestinian negotiator Saab Erekat of Fatah called on Israel to take more steps to help Fatah.
We need to see to it settlement activities in the wall stop, and this was discussed thoroughly and we hope to see it on the ground. Secondly, restoring the situation to that which existed prior to September 28, 2000 in the West Bank, meaning restoration of the legal and political status of Area A and B, meaning the fugitives file and the deportees, and then the release of Palestinian prisoners. We need genuine moves, and we hope to see the results of what was discussed and what was agreed and what was put under consideration.
A new United Nations report has found opium production in Afghanistan has jumped by nearly 50% over the past year. Afghanistan now accounts for 92% of the world's illicit opium production. Much of the opium is converted into heroin and morphine and distributed around the world. UN inspectors are in North Korea today to discuss plans to shut down the country's main nuclear reactor. On Monday, the State Department's Christopher Hill said North Korea has agreed to address questions over its highly enriched uranium program. Hill spoke in Washington after returning from a surprise visit to Pyongyang.
So we have a long way to go. What we're looking for in terms of shutting down this reactor, or shutting down this complex in Yongbyon, is just a first step of many steps. But if all goes well, we would hope that by the end of the calendar year 07, we will have the facility shut down and disabled. We would have a peace process, a peace mechanism talks underway in the Korean Peninsula.
New government statistics show over 54 million people had no health insurance for at least part of last year. Texas had the largest percentage of uninsured people. Nearly a quarter of the state's population has no health insurance. Meanwhile, the New York Sun is reporting the insurance and pharmaceutical industries are readying a multifaceted counteroffensive against Michael Moore's new film, Sicko. Several think tanks and front groups are being bankrolled to attack Moore's critique of the healthcare industry. According to The Sun, the groups involved in the campaign include the Cato Institute, the Manhattan Institute, the Galen Institute, Pacific Research Institute, the Heritage Foundation, and FreedomWorks, which is run by former House Republican Majority Leader Dick Armey. German prosecutors are requesting 13 CIA agents be extradited from the United States to stand trial for the kidnapping of German citizen Khaled Al-Masri. Al-Masri was seized in Macedonia and flown to Afghanistan, where he was held in a secret prison and tortured. Al-Masri was released after U.S. officials realized they seized an innocent man. Meanwhile, protests are continuing over the Bush administration's support for torture. Monday, the president was personally presented a letter signed by 50 high school seniors in the Presidential Scholars Program. The letter said, quote, "We do not want America to represent torture. We urge you to do all in your power to stop violations of the human rights of detainees, to cease illegal renditions, and to apply the Geneva Convention to all detainees, including those designated enemy combatants." White House Press Secretary Dana Perino said the president was not expecting the student's letter, but read it and then told the students that the United States does not torture and that the country values human rights. Meanwhile, protests are taking place across the country to mark the UN's International Day to remember the victims of torture. In Washington, the American Civil Liberties Union is organizing a day of action to restore law and justice. The World Bank's board has unanimously approved Robert Zoellick to become the bank's next president, replacing the outgoing Paul Wolfowitz. President Bush personally handpicked Zoellick for the job. Under an informal agreement, the United States always selects the head of the World Bank. Zoellick's record as former U.S. trade negotiator has been criticized. David Wasko of Friends of the Earth said, quote, "When he was the U.S. trade czar, Zoellick was known for repeatedly rejecting developing countries' concerns on issues like agriculture, access to medicines, and protecting biodiversity." In political news, Rudolph Giuliani's campaign team in South Carolina is facing another setback. Last week, the chair of Giuliani's state campaign, Thomas Ravenal, stepped down after he was indicted for conspiracy to distribute cocaine. On Monday, Giuliani named Ravenal's father, Andrew Ravenal, to serve as the state's new campaign co-chair. The elder Ravenal is no stranger to controversy himself. In 2000, he called the NAACP the National Association for Retarded People. When asked about the comment, Ravenal claimed he had misspoken. He said, quote, "I made a rhetorical slip and they want to lynch me for it." And in education news, students at DePaul University have begun a hunger strike to protest the school's decision to deny tenure to Norman Finkelstein and Maureen LaRudy. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Nearly 6 years after the 9/11 attacks, the former head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Christine Todd Whitman, appeared on Capitol Hill Monday to answer questions on whether the government misled residents and workers in the safety of the air quality around Ground Zero. In the days after the Twin Towers collapse, Whitman assured New York City residents the air was safe to breathe. Thousands of workers and residents have suffered respiratory problems and other illnesses. At least two deaths have been directly linked to the toxic Ground Zero dust. Whitman's appearance marked the first time a top federal official has publicly responded to questions on the government's handling of environmental health impact of 9/11. In a heated session, Whitman defended her record and refused to express regret for assuring residents and workers the air around Lower Manhattan was safe. She also denied what many believe drove her misleading statements, political pressure from the White House. Whitman also admitted she had not read the clinical reports from the Mount Sinai Medical Center's World Trade Center Worker and Volunteer Medical Screening Program. A Mount Sinai study last year found 70% of around 10,000 Ground Zero workers developed new or worsened respiratory problems. Dozens of Ground Zero workers and residents were on hand for the hearing. We'll get reaction later in the broadcast, but first we turn to Christine Todd Whitman's testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I fully appreciate that the events of 9/11 touch raw emotions, but I am disappointed at the misinformation, innuendo, and outright falsehoods that have characterized the public discussion about EPA in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks. EPA's most extreme critics have alleged that I knowingly misled New Yorkers and the workers of Ground Zero about the safety risks associated with environmental contamination. The destructive and incendiary charge was investigated by EPA's Inspector General, who confirmed in her 2003 report that we did not conceal any of our test data from the public. In fact, within days of the 9/11 report, I authorized EPA to post all the test data, all of it, on a public website. I did so precisely because I wanted to be as transparent to the public as possible. Statements that EPA officials made after 9/11 were based on the judgment of experienced environmental and health professionals at EPA, OSHA, and the CDC, who had analyzed the test data that 13 different organizations and agencies were collecting in Lower Manhattan. I do not recall any EPA scientist or experts responsible for reviewing this data ever advising me that the test data from Lower Manhattan showed that the air or water proposed long-term health risks for the general public. With respect to the immediate area where the towers fell, however, the data revealed, and we publicly reported, that the air was different than in the rest of Manhattan. As these charts over here show, in the weeks following the attacks, EPA officials repeatedly warned of the risk to workers at Ground Zero and noticed the difference between air quality at the site and the air in the rest of New York. I and other EPA officials publicly urged rescue and recovery workers to wear protective gear that EPA had secured for their use at Ground Zero. The EPA also advised workers at Ground Zero of the proper washing procedures for their clothes and equipment. In fact, on September 11th, only hours after the attack, EPA officials prepared this flyer that I would direct your attention to. For distribution by FEMA to rescue and recovery workers at the site. As you can see, Mr. Chairman, the flyer informed workers of the risks of asbestos exposure caused by the collapse and cautioned workers to use protective equipment, including appropriate eyeglasses, respirators, and protective clothing. It also urged proper cleaning procedures for clothing and equipment. It is utterly false, then, for EPA critics to assert that I or others in the agency set about to mislead New Yorkers or the rescue workers. Mr. Chairman, the grief of 9/11 remains with us. Like many others, I lost personal friends that day. I suspect there will be a lot of talk about in this hearing about blame and responsibility for what happened on September 11th and in its aftermath. Let's be clear, there are people to blame. They are the terrorists who attacked the United States, not the men and women at all levels of government who worked heroically to protect this country.
That was former EPA head Christine Todd Whitman. Testifying Monday before the House Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties, Whitman was met with criticism from Congress members who insisted the public was misled on the toxic dangers of Ground Zero. The hearing was called by New York Democratic Congressmember Gerald Nadler, whose district includes the World Trade Center. In his opening remarks, Nadler had harsh words for the Bush administration's assurances to lower Manhattan residents.
Our government knowingly exposed thousands of American citizens unnecessarily to deadly hazardous materials. And because it has never admitted the truth, Americans remain at grave risk to this day. Thousands of first responders, residents, area workers, and students are sick, and some are dead. And that toll will continue to grow until we get the truth and take appropriate action. Those false statements continue to the present. Administrator Whitman has said there has never been a subsequent study that disproved what agency scientists told us all along. She admits to note that what agency scientists and others told her was very, very different from what the EPA communicated to the public. A September 2003 statement of 19 EPA union local heads reads, "Little did the Civil Service expect that their professional work would be subverted by political pressure applied by the White House. These workers reported to senior EPA officials their best estimate of the risks, and they expected those estimates and the accompanying recommendations for protective measures to be released in a timely manner to those who need the information. The public was not informed of all the health risks. This information was withheld under orders of the White House. The Bush White House had information released, drafted by political appointees, that it knew to contradict the scientific facts. It misinformed, and many rescue workers and citizens suffered. Some citizens now face the long-term risk of asbestos-related lung cancer, as well as other debilitating respiratory ailments as a result." Close quote. I want to conclude with a pronouncement made by then-Administrator Whitman in September 2001. She declared then, quote, "The President has said, spare no expense. Do everything you need to do to make sure the people of this city are safe as far as the environment is concerned." Close quote. It is my fervent hope that after some of the truth begins to come to light through these hearings, we will see that this promise made to the victims and heroes of 9/11 is finally kept.
House Subcommittee Chair, New York Democratic Congressmember Gerald Nadler. He went on to question Whitman and former Occupational Safety and Health Administration head John Henshaw. Both refused to repudiate their statement that the air around Ground Zero was safe.
In a series of EPA press releases beginning on September 13th, the following words were used to describe the air conditions. Good news, causes no concern, not detectable, no significant health risk, and safe to breathe. Ms. Whitman, do these words and phrases convey a sense of danger or even of caution, or do they in fact convey a sense of safety and security?
Mr. Chairman, those words, to the best of my recollection and every effort that I made at the time, were also added with the phrase, however, on the pile, it is different.
Well, we'll get
and
to that.
There's a significant difference. The readings we were getting.
Excuse me, we will get to that, please. We only have a few minutes. Answer my questions. Do they convey a sense of safety and security or a sense of caution?
They convey exactly what they were meant to convey.
Okay.
Those were the readings we were getting from the scientists.
Do you regret your repeated assurances the air was safe to breathe?
I do not regret repeating what
okay.
the scientists said was appropriate
to say. Mr. Henshaw, do these words and phrases convey a sense of danger or even of caution, or do they convey a sense of safety and security, in your opinion?
Again, not counting the pile. The pile was a separate
circumstance. We'll get to the pile.
All right. We took 240 samples.
Please, answer the question. We'll
all of our that. Samples were significantly below our permissible
Excuse
exposure
me.
Limit.
You said that already. It's on the record. I just asked you if this conveyed a sense of safety.
That conveys that the environment is safe.
Okay, thank you. Do you now regret saying it was safe for New Yorkers to go back to work 6 days after the terrorist attack? Was that a mistake?
Not within the financial district. On the pile was a different circumstance. Sir, I do not regret that.
But in the area around it, it was okay.
All of our data indicated that it was okay.
Former OSHA head John Henshaw, questioned by New York Democratic Congressmember Gerald Nadler. Some Republicans defended the Bush administration's handling of the Ground Zero cleanup. Arizona Congressmember Trent Franks and Democratic Congressmember John Conyers exchanged words over whether Democrats have taken their criticism too far.
I understand that Chairman Nadler held a press conference to criticize state and local official efforts to provide for injured 911 rescue workers, in which he said, quote, "The villains are no longer the terrorists. The villains live in the White House and in the Gracie Mansion and in the governor's office," close quote. Let us be clear, Mr. Chairman. The villains are the terrorists. The villains remain the terrorists. The terrorists caused the harm on 9-1-1. We must be very careful not to equate, even unintentionally, the good faith efforts of government officials to dutifully respond to an emergency in strange circumstances with the vicious, premeditated violence perpetrated by bloodthirsty murderers who express desire to kill as many innocent people as possible. With that, Mr. Chairman, I look forward to the witness.
Would the distinguished gentleman yield to me?
Certainly.
And I thank you, Mr. Franks. As the ranking member, we appreciate your presence very much. What I wanted to just make sure that we all agree on, that we're in no way attempting to intervene with the court procedures or what's going on in the court, and that we're not trying to obfuscate or in any way discredit anything that is going on at this present time in the federal courts under the legal procedure. I think we're all in agreement that is not our goal here, to interfere or even to instruct the courts. We're holding the hearing pursuant to our responsibilities as members of the one committee in the Congress that can inquire into these matters. And I just wanted to seek your assurance that's why we're all here.
Well, I understand, Mr. Chairman, and I accept that at face value. I guess I would just suggest that, given the sensibilities of the issue here, that it might be better for the courts to come to their conclusion before we begin to second-guess them.
Republican Congressmember Trent Franks responding to Democratic Congressmember John Conyers. When we come back from break, we'll hear others like Keith Ellison, the first Muslim member of Congress, grilling Christine Todd Whitman. We'll also speak with people who went to the hearings from New York, from Ground Zero, who are sick today. Stay with us. Charlie Hayden, We Shall Overcome. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue with other people at the House subcommittee hearing yesterday who continued to press the former EPA Administrator Christine Todd Whitman on the government's repeated assurances on the Ground Zero air. Whitman defended her remarks under questioning from Democratic Congressmember Keith Ellison of Minnesota.
Let me ask you this. Do you agree that after those planes collided with those with the towers, that it caused an immediately dangerous, toxic levels for people of air quality, dust and water?
Do you... Oh, we were enormously concerned when those towers came down.
Right. And do you also agree today, even looking back in hindsight, that the language that you used gave people a false sense of safety?
No, I do not agree that it gave them a false sense of safety. We were talking about air quality, the general ambient air quality in Lower Manhattan, and the impact on long-term health. And I'm sorry if that was not what people
but
that was what the scientists were telling.
I'm sorry, Governor, I only got 5 minutes. I would never interrupt you under normal circumstances, but I only got 5 minutes. Given the scope, this is a quote from the September 18th EPA response, given the scope of tragedy from last week, I am glad to reassure the people of New York and Washington, D.C., that their air is safe to breathe and the water is safe to drink. Now, that is a fairly sweeping statement about reassurance, do you now feel that you spoke a little bit too broadly and a little bit too soon about the actual quality of the air and the water?
Every test that we have gotten back, all the data would have indicated, well, Congressman, you know, it's fine to go through the yes and no's, but I think it's important for people to understand that these were not whims. These were not decisions by a politician. Everything I said was based on what I was hearing from professionals. My son was in Building 7 on that day, Congressman.
And Governor,
and I almost lost
Governor,
him.
No this one,
is
Governor,
as it is
Governor,
anyone, and I would
no,
never
no, no, Governor,
public,
excuse
ever.
Me, I'm not going to allow you to turn this into a personal thing. It's personal for the people
it's
out here.
It's personal with everybody.
It's personal to the people out here, too, Governor.
Yes,
personal
I understand
to them too,
that.
And I'm not going to stand here and allow you to try to obfuscate the questions that I'm asking.
Not obfuscate, Congressman. I'm
by doing what you
I have
want.
Been called a liar.
No,
I've been
I'm
called
not
a liar even in this room today.
Governor, I'm not calling you. Governor, I'm not calling
with
you.
With all due respect, you're sitting
Governor,
in the panel with people who
I'm not calling you that.
Time of the gentleman has expired.
That was former EPA head Christine Todd Whitman, questioned by Congressmember Keith Ellison of Minnesota. Whitman later got into another exchange with Democratic Congressmember William Pascrell of New Jersey.
The people are not making these stories up. The people are not claiming that their illnesses or sicknesses are coming from something other than they felt their work in the area. That's very dangerous, and I think you'd agree with that, very serious. And we have a responsibility in the government to protect and to prevent things from happening. If these people are correct that they suffered these things, then I don't care what reports you tell us about. I don't care what evidence you present. The evidence is that people, I've convinced, are not lying, that they are sick, that they have had very difficult situations in breathing, pulmonary problems. I've talked to these people myself, Governor. They're not making this stuff up.
Congressman, I would never say they were making it up, and I have talked to them as well.
Well, good.
That's
now that
one
we,
of the reasons
now that
why,
we believe that they're not.
That's one of the reasons why we continued to say that those working on the pile should wear respirators. That's why we're repeating
but they all
it
didn't.
Over and over again.
They all didn't.
No, they
and
did
the
not.
The judge who handled the case, and in conclusion, I want to make this point very clear. The judge who handled the case that was brought against you and against the EPA was very clear. He said this: Whitman's deliberate and misleading statements made to the press, where she reassured the public that the air was safe to breathe around Lower Manhattan and Brooklyn, that there would be no health risk presented to those returning to those areas, shock the conscience. That's what he said. I didn't say that. Natalie didn't say that. King didn't say that. That's what he said. He also said no reasonable person would have thought that telling thousands of people that it was safe to return to Lower Manhattan while knowing such a return could pose long-term risks and other dire consequences was conduct sanctioned by our laws. And let me tell you something, Governor, very clearly. There is a reason. There is a reason for this happening. And there's a reason for why this judge said what he did. And let me tell you also, you know that this administration that you worked for has very little credibility and accountability. So you wonder, you don't wonder why we asked questions about what was coming out. We wanted one voice. Give me a break. We're talking about people's health here. We're talking about families. We're talking about human faces. And you know that just as well as I do. I ask you, come clear the air so that we could all go forward.
The gentleman's time has expired. The witness may answer the question.
Thank you. First of all, I'd just like to
that's
a particular judge. And there was another judge in the Southern District Court on the same day looking at the same congressman. There was a judge in the Southern District Court on the same day looking at the basic same fact pattern, came to a very different conclusion. She did not look at fact. That is, as you, I think you are a lawyer, Congressman. Okay, well then, I'm not either. It's one of the few things we share, Congressman. We're neither one of us are.
I have two sons that are lawyers. I don't hold it against them.
One of the things that a judge must take as fact in that kind of a proceeding are the allegations by the plaintiffs. They don't look at fact. They don't hear testimony on it. They have to take that as fact. And she was adjudicating whether or not.
Well, I'm glad someone from the administration past and present believes that we should rely on science. That's what we will do.
New Jersey Congressmember Bill Pascrell questioning the former head of the EPA, Christine Todd Whitman. She's also former governor of New Jersey. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. For many seeking government accountability for illnesses or complications from the Ground Zero dust, Monday's hearing marked a small feat in a long struggle. Despite nearly 6 years, thousands of illnesses, and at least two attributable deaths, it was the first time a top federal official has publicly responded to questions on the government's handling of the environmental health impact of 9/11. At least two busloads of Ground Zero workers and residents made the trip down to Washington, D.C. I'm joined now by two members of the delegation. Joanne Lum is a community organizer with Beyond Ground Zero. That's a coalition of public health advocates, doctors, and clergy formed in response to the health crisis in Lower Manhattan after 9/11. Yolanda Hernandez is a longtime resident of the Lower East Side, has suffered serious health effects from the toxic dust at Ground Zero. Joel Kupferman is also with us, executive director of the New York Environmental Law and Justice Project and co-counsel in a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency, alleging it failed to protect people from the poor air quality in the days and weeks following the World Trade Center attacks. On the phone with us, New York Daily News columnist, Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez, the first reporter to question government officials' claims on the safety of the Ground Zero air, and remains a leading voice on this issue. He wrote the book Fallout, The Environmental Consequences of the World Trade Center Collapse. Juan, I know you got in about 2 or 3 in the morning, so you are not able to join us here in the studio, but your assessment of this first appearance public explanation by Christine Todd Whitman.
Well, Amy, as you saw in the clips, I think the main thrust was that Whitman had no regrets about any of the stuff that she had told the public or that her agency had told the public in the first few days after 9/11. She reiterated that the scientists, that she was following the conclusions of the scientists, yet Congressman Nadler raised to her that there were scientists within the government who had raised concerns from the earliest days, including Ed Kilbourn from the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, ATSDR, who warned on September 12th that there were significant asbestos readings in the scanty in the early tests that EPA had done, and questioning whether it was advisable to have people re-enter buildings in the financial district. And Whitman basically did not respond to that when she was told by Congressman Nadler that there were very few air monitoring tests in the first couple of days when before she made her first first pronouncement that that there were no danger problems from contaminants, but that the few tests that there were, for instance, the city of New York had 10 air asbestos air monitoring tests in the first couple of days. 7 of them, or 70%, showed elevated asbestos levels. And when she was asked about that, she said that she couldn't recall which tests were taken on what day, but she continued to say that the scientists were backing up her claims. So I think that was one big hole in the testimony. I think the other interesting thing, which was the discussions about the White House involvement in the rewriting of press releases, Whitman essentially defended having non-scientists involved in the rewriting of these press releases. At one point, she said that there had been one substantive change that she did not agree with, that a White House aide had directed be changed, eliminating all advisories from EPA that people should professionally clean their apartments before returning. And the White House official who later testified after her, Samuel Thurnstrom from the Council on Environmental Quality, insisted that he did that because that was a jurisdictional question, that really belonged to the city of New York to decide, not for EPA. But Whitman admitted that she did not agree with that, but that she went along with it at that point, because she believed in the idea that the government should speak with one voice. The other interesting thing I think that she said was that she said at one point that that she had been told by White House officials that President Bush wanted the downtown area, the financial district, opened on the Friday of the attack, which the attack was on a Tuesday. So within a couple of days, the president wanted the financial district reopened, but that she convinced the White House to wait a few more days until they were able to do more testing. And so the financial district opened on the following Monday.
That's astounding, Juan. We're talking about the September 11th attacks being Tuesday, September 11, 2001. 3 days later, on Friday,
right,
on September 14th, they wanted Wall Street to be open.
Right, and she also said that she had gotten a call from a key person in the White House Council on Economic Advisors, reminding her how important Wall Street was to the country. But she said that she did not feel that that was pressure from the White House to reopen the financial district. She seemed to indicate that she demonstrated her independence by saying, hey, let's wait until Monday. Let's not do it on Friday.
Interestingly, also, when it came to Rudolph Giuliani, though he has criticized her, she defended him.
Want the press to stoke any kind of conflicts between her and Mayor Giuliani. And at one point she said, I don't think Mayor Giuliani is criticizing me and I'm not criticizing him. At the same time, she did say that EPA on an almost daily basis told the city of New York that the workers at Ground Zero needed to be proper breathing apparatuses and proper equipment, and she said this was being done on a daily basis. And obviously, if it was being done on a daily basis, it's because the instructions weren't being followed. And when she was asked by several of the Congress members, well, EPA was the ultimate agency in charge. You could have stepped in and taken charge of the site. She said that they considered that, that they talked to their lawyers, and that she felt that if EPA had moved in and sought to assert control, that it would have been considered an agency. In essence, because there were firefighters and police that were still digging up the remains of people who had died there, and that there would have been a huge public uproar against her agency, they decided ultimately that they would not exercise federal control and take over the site. So she really was criticizing the city of New York for failing to properly protect the Ground Zero workers, but at the same time, she was obviously trying to pull her punches in terms of, like, directly criticizing former Mayor Giuliani.
And saying that she didn't want people to wear hazmat suits, it would look like the city was falling apart?
Yeah, she didn't really talk about that in this hearing. She has said it in interviews in the last few days. But she concentrated more on the issue, because she was told and so was John Henshaw, the OSHA head, that over at the Pentagon, no one was allowed on the site at the Pentagon attacks during the recovery phase who was not wearing proper equipment. And Henshaw tried to said something to the effect that the local state regulations there did require all municipal workers to follow proper federal guidelines, whereas in New York City, police and firefighters are not covered by OSHA regulations, so that basically it was up to the city of New York to do its own policing.
Joanne Lum, can you talk about your coalition and talk about your response to the hearings that you attended yesterday?
Beyond Ground Zero is made up mainly of a lot of the most forgotten victims of 911, and that is residents on the Lower East Side, Chinatown, Lower Manhattan, low-income immigrant cleanup workers around Ground Zero, as well as office and service workers and others who worked in the area of Lower Manhattan. And what we're seeing, people were really determined to go down to Washington yesterday. So we went in two busloads because people were really angry. They remembered what Christine Whitman said in 2001. And in fact, one of the Ground Zero workers who went yesterday said, if I had been told that this was a danger zone, I would have been the first not to have gone in there to work. And a lot of the workers who did go to clean up and help out, they felt like they were heroes. They felt like, you know, they were helping this country get back on their feet. They sent pictures back to their homes, their families in Colombia and Ecuador and Mexico, you know, very proud. And so when they began to get sick after being exposed to the 911 toxic fallout. They felt betrayed by this country and really angry. And so when people went down and heard her yesterday say that she maintained that the air was okay outside of the pile, people were enraged. I mean, people were felt betrayed again. I mean, that the government continues to lie like this because meanwhile they're sick and getting sicker every day and feeling that the government has not been helping them address their illnesses. And so we have, you know, Lower East Side residents like Yolanda, many others who live, you know, more than a mile away and who are really sick and getting sicker.
We're going to go to Yolanda just after break. Joanne Lum, community organizer with Beyond Ground Zero, Yolanda Hernandez, longtime resident of Lower East Side. And we'll speak with a New York environmentalist and attorney who is suing the Bush administration over the way they dealt with the consequences of the 9/11 attacks. Stay with us. Charlie Hayden and his Music Liberation Orchestra here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Our guests are, well, Juan Gonzalez on the line wrote Fallout, the environmental consequences of the World Trade Center collapse, just came back early this morning from the hearing yesterday in Washington, D.C., the congressional hearing that was chaired by New York Congressmember Gerald Nadler. We're also joined by Joel Kupferman, executive director of the New York Environmental Law and Justice Project, who is suing the Bush administration, and Yolanda Hernandez, a longtime resident of the Lower East Side. Yolanda, what happened to you after September 11th? Where were you on that day in 2001?
And that day, I'd be in my house, and I see, you know, they're coming a lot of dust in my house, a lot of dust. So I said, what happened? I don't know what happened. So I put my head, you know, out the window. I see, you know, the twin, you know, go down. So I said, oh, my God, what happened? So I told my daughter, what's going on? My daughter said, what happened? I said, everything, you know, coming down, dust, and I be, you know, coughing. So I tried to clean it, but 2 months later, I feel like a pain in my chest. So I go to the hospital to see what's going on. And the doctor said they have a problem, you know, respiratory. I hear about the program in Bellevue. They have a Red Cross. So I go over there to, because they told me they do an examination complete. So they do an examination complete, and they found they have inflammation in my lung. I never have this in my life. And now I take a medication twice in the day. I said to the doctor, I want to have, you know, that inflammation on my life. I said, yeah, because, you know, your lung is, you know, they're not good. And that because that's for the dust. And that coming for that. But my point is, why the lie, why Christian would lie that the air is, you know, is clean, what that is not true. Yeah, I'm disappointed because yesterday when I go to the conference and I see the chief apologize for nothing. She only defends herself. She don't care about the people that die. It's a lot of people die. I'm not the only one because and now I'll be here, but in the future, I don't know that can have becoming worse. I'm concerned about the people, you know, be there too.
Have you gotten any kind of compensation afterwards or health care, special health care?
I have health care But no, I don't know how long they have the health care, because I wanted like they come like a training for the people, and they give you, you know, examination to see in the future they have a hope to, you know, they don't be sick no more. And the governor and the Bush, they don't do nothing. The only thing they do is lie, and they continue liar.
Joel Kupferman, talk about your lawsuit.
Lawsuit represents people like Yolanda, students, workers, office workers that came back to Lower Manhattan on Christy Todd Whitman's false words that all was safe. We made a constitutional claim, claiming that there's a Fifth Amendment violation, that these words brought these people back into the zone of danger and risked their bodily integrity. Right now, we're in the Court of Appeals. Judge Batts' decision was quoted heavily yesterday. The phrase egregious conduct was Judge Batts' term for Whitman's words. And we await word from Court of Appeals. We await all argument.
You're wearing an orange ribbon on your shirt. What is that about?
This is for the victims of Agent Orange. We were in Court of Appeals, the same Second Circuit, just last week, representing those victims, trying to get them compensation from the U.S. spraying of Agent Orange. What's alarming, I thought it couldn't really get worse with 9/11, but it turns out that Christy Todd Whitman is now on a panel sponsored by the Ford Foundation to create dialogue to figure out what happened in Vietnam with Agent Orange and to help the victims. So when we heard that it was Christy Todd Whitman, I was quite taken aback.
Joanne Lum, your organization, Beyond Ground Zero, did a report about a year or two after the attacks, talking about the effects on the low-income communities of New York around 9/11. What did you find?
We found that among a lot of these low-income residents of Lower East Side and Chinatown and the low-income workers who cleaned up Ground Zero, that, you know, just a high percentage of them have come down with all kinds of illnesses since their exposure to 911. A lot of respiratory problems, digestive problems, skin, vision, you know, there are high incidences among women of miscarriages. And people are saying that it's because of their work down at 911.
I remember a story that actually the New Yorker magazine made famous of a very high-end apartment building where the residents came home not too long after 9/11, and they saw people in the lobby who were asking them for their addresses, how much money they needed, and they gave them something like $10,000 or $15,000. And they said, why? We haven't even asked for this. And they said they were giving out money. Mm-hmm. They couldn't even refuse the money. Yet what has happened in the low-income communities?
Nothing like that was ever offered to the low-income people. And in fact, we found that there was a disproportionate amount of FEMA money, you know, Federal Emergency Management Agency money, that went to the higher income zip codes in Lower Manhattan. And that people on the east side, the lower income people in Chinatown, the Lower East Side, got very small percentage of the aid from FEMA right after 911. And we felt like this was real discrimination, you know, racially and income-wise for people who were affected by 911.
Joel Kupferman, Rudolph Giuliani. Yes, the hearing yesterday was Christine Todd Whitman about her, the former New Jersey governor, and relevant here, the former head of the EPA. But where did Rudolph Giuliani fit into this picture and that whole discussion of Christine Todd Whitman saying that they wanted the respirators, it was the city that was not pushing this, it was the mayor?
They're right. He was right in the middle. He kept on claiming that he was responsible for the site. He basically tried to keep the federal government out. He kept a lot of the warnings that the federal government was supposedly giving, going to his people. But also, what was scary is that he silenced a lot of people. I spoke to scientists in the New York City government that were told, stay out of Lower Manhattan. We don't want you. We don't want your expertise. And I think that is Mayor Giuliani's fault for keeping a lot of that information away from people.
What do you mean?
They kept on talking yesterday about the scientists relying on the scientists. A lot of this information relying on the scientists was only on a few scientists. The scientists that were screaming that this is the wrong information, and the mayor, And Chrissy Tubwebin kept these people silent.
Where does your court case stand right now?
Well, we're waiting for the Court of Appeals to rule, but I just also want to point out that what we're asking for is a proper cleanup. EPA came in and did a very improper cleanup, told people that just by doing a few minor changes, following their procedures, that their apartments were clean, and it turned out that their apartments were not clean. And so we're asking for a proper cleanup, and we're also asking for proper monitoring of all those people who are out there. So we're waiting for the Second Circuit. And Chrissy Tubwebin is claiming immunity, that the fact that she was a government official, that she should be basically let off the hook.
Juan Gonzalez, you wrote a piece on Monday, this was just before the hearing, yesterday, where you talked about the 10 questions you had for Christine Tubwebin. What do you think still has to be answered today?
Well, I think that there are still, most of the questions that I listed were asked, although I think that one was not really followed up very well, which is, you know, many of the respiratory problems that people have suffered from have been traced to scarring of the lungs and into people's breathing system, a lot of which caused by the highly caustic dust that was blanketing all of lower Manhattan. And in fact, the alkalinity levels were as corrosive as drain cleaner, according to one study that was done but was not released to the public until months afterwards. And EPA was required to test for alkalinity to protect rescue workers in any emergency. They had never released any of those initial reports, if they took them, or they may not have taken them at all. This was never really followed up. A question was asked of Whitman about it, but she deflected it and then was never followed up on by any of the other Congress members. But I think the other interesting issue is the whole issue of the White House involvement. I think the members of the Congress who compared the original press releases of EPA versus what was actually produced show that there were clear substantive changes, not just mere word changes to these releases, to downplay any alerts to the public that this may be a problem, the contamination there. And the interesting thing in terms of that was that Samuel Thernstrom, who was the person at the White House who was actually doing the rewriting of the releases, was asked at one point, because he came on in a panel after Whitman, and by then most of the press had left, and they didn't pay attention to the important Thernstrom testimony. But Thernstrom, he was assigned to coordinate between the National Security Council and the EPA and OSHA, all public announcements about environmental problems. Thernstrom was asked, who appointed you at the National Security Council to this job? Who were you reporting to? He said, I don't know who appointed me. He said he did not know who his superior was at the National Security Council, and yet the Security Council had to approve all of the press releases he was rewriting. So at one point, Congressman Nadler asked him, well, who did you send your press releases to get approval? And Thernstrom, in a bizarre exchange, said, well, I faxed them to the National Security Council, and then I got a reply back with the approval of my press releases. So, in other words, I believe he clearly must have known who at the National Security Council he was reporting to and who had the ultimate say, but he couldn't remember, and he didn't know because I think he was, in essence, trying to not identify someone in the National Security Council to whom the committee could then try to possibly recall in a future hearing. So that the role of the National Security Council, in essence, vetting all press releases that came out from OSHA and EPA, to me, is critical. And the final thing is that John Henshaw, the head of OSHA, made a startling statement at one point when he was asked, I think it was by Keith Ellison, he said, isn't it true that there is no recognized safe level of asbestos exposure? And Henshaw said, no, that's not true. There is a safe level of asbestos exposure. Now, there is nothing in any government record that I know of that says that there is a safe level of asbestos exposure. There are permissible levels that workers can be exposed to, but there is no safe level, and no science has recognized that there is a safe level of asbestos exposure.
And Christine Todd Whitman saying she feared that New Yorkers would react badly if the federal government took over the site, taking the city to court, that the debris pile represented a substantive and imminent danger, a finding that would have given the federal government the right to take over?
Yes, the EPA had had the legal authority to take over the site. It chose not to do so. But I think the argument of many of the litigants is that it still had ultimate responsibility for assuring that the public's health was protected, and it did not do so.
Joanne Lum, where does Beyond Ground Zero go from here? This is what now, 6 years later?
Well, we're calling for the government to pay for this lie, this misconduct. And so besides Christine Whitman acknowledging, apologizing, we're saying that she should be punished for this. She should go to prison. I mean, people died because of her misconduct, her mislie. And so one of the things we're also calling for is that the government, the federal government, put funds into addressing the health problems of these victims of 911. Like Yolanda was saying, through organizing, we were able to get this 911 health program at Bellevue Hospital, which is good, but it's way underfunded. The federal government really needs to put money into quality, accessible medical treatment program. And it needs to also put money into investigation, study, because a lot of the doctors, even as they see people now, they don't really know how to treat it because the symptoms are growing increasingly complex. The illnesses are getting increasingly serious. And so we're also calling for all residents and workers out there who are sick or afraid of getting ill to come forward, to come together, so that we can put pressure on the government so that they take action to address these illnesses.
And Yolanda, what do you need most? And other people, do you find other people in your community, in the Lower East Side, any of them suffering from the same thing you are?
Especially in my building, it's a lot of people, suffering for asthma, and they don't know they're coming for the 9/11. Now they find out they have the same problem. I say, I have the same problem too. And I don't know, to go because nobody, nobody believe me. But now the people say, oh, now I know why I'm sick. So it's a lot of people now in my building. They go to the hospital. It's a lady now in the building. She's very sick and she can breathe. And they're coming from 9/11. So I ask, the people, they feel they sick to go to the hospital because it's, help. And to demand Bush to do something because, it's a lot of people die. And Kristen Warner, she the one kill these people. And like I said before, she need to pay for that she do for the people.
I want to thank you all for being with us. Yolanda Hernandez is sick, lived in the Lower East Side at 9/11 and today. Joel Kupferman, executive director of the New York Environmental Law and Justice Project, co-counsel for a group of residents, workers, students suing Christine Todd Whitman and the EPA. Joanne Lum is with the group Beyond Ground Zero, a coalition of public health advocates. And of course, Juan Gonzalez, Democracy Now! Co-host, New York Daily News reporter, wrote the book Fallout, The Environmental Consequences of the World Trade Center Collapse. And that does it for our broadcast. If you'd like to get a copy, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkshire, Fabdo Kadous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Aaron Mate, Anjali Comet, Jay Babalota, Jeffrey Hagerman, Nicole Salazar, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, our engineers. Happy birthday to Karen Renucci. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.